What's up, everybody? Welcome back to MMA After Hours. It's Michael Carlisle and Micah Frankel after the holiday. Micah, how you doing, man?
I think I need a bacchiotomy, dude. It's a rough morning for me. You saw I walked in here looking like the hunchback of Notre Dame with my material. It's not that I carry too much material. It's a rough one today, man.
Is a bacchiotomy a thing?
I'm not even sure. Might be something I heard as a kid and
could be
a movie from the 90s and just stuck with me because it was hilarious.
Is there a transplant list you can get on to get a new back, or are you kind of stuck with the one you got?
I'm stuck with the one I got. It's just the more morphine, the better.
Well, that might be great for the back. I can't help but feel like more morphine would have an adverse effect on the show.
Well, we're going to see how we go on this ride.
Oh, Lord. Ooh. It's going to be one of those shows. Hope everybody had a great holiday. Mike, I hope you had a great holiday as well.
You too, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess it's partially my fault your back, at least today, is in the shape it's in because we were out playing way too much disc golf over the holidays, and that has taken its toll.
You and wanting to break in the new presence.
It
was fun, though. It was fun. It's also been a fun year in MMA.
For sure. And this is our year-end spectacular. Something. Whatever. Everybody else does it. We're going to do it, too. Damn it.
Imaginary Awards.
Exactly. Prestigious Imaginary Awards. Before we get to that, though, there are some news and notes and things we need to touch on. Let's go ahead and get the fight announcements out of the way, Micah.
Well, we got a couple big ones, and the two biggest ones that I've seen out there, the UFC Fight Night on, looks like, February 18th. Mm-hmm. We have a bantamweight main event, Chito Vera and his four-fight win streak against Corey Sandhagen, who comes in off of literally slicing and dicing up Yadong in September.
I hate it when that happens.
I mean, that one's going to be a pivot. Don't you hate it when your dong
gets all cut up and sliced? Yes.
Oh, awful stuff for that.
Nothing hurts me worse than when your dong gets cut up and sliced up.
And we now also know the main event of the UFC Fight Night in San Antonio, Texas, on March 25th. We have a top 15 welterweight matchup. Sean Brady looking to rebound off the loss against Bilal Muhammad, going to be taking on Brazil's Michel Pajada. Pajada on a 5-fight win streak, coming off a split decision over Santiago Ponzinibbio. So those are the two biggest ones that I got for you, and I figured with the year-end spectacular, we'll just keep it to the big announcements for this week, but there have been quite a few other announcements out there. One more real quick, actually.
Okay.
Tempting me.
Sorry.
UFC 284, we have an adjustment. Now, originally, Alex Pettis was going to be on that card against Kai Kara France.
Right.
Kai Kara France is off the card, and Alex Pettis will be fighting a bit closer to home now. He has been relocated to the UFC San Antonio card March 25th, going to be taking on Manel Camp, who is now training out of Las Vegas.
All right. Interesting. Yeah, that actually makes sense. Put him on the San Antonio card, right?
I guess so. If they're both training in the States, yeah. Neither one is a big draw. I understand. If it was the opposite and it was Kara France losing the opponent, you figure, all right, Camp would be there at 284. But I guess that one makes sense to have it readjusted. Julian Marquez and Marc-Andre Bertal, that one's been added to UFC 285 on March 4th. We know that Marquez recently lost his fight against Darren Wynn, when Wynn slipped and fell at the UFC Apex. I'm guessing was a little dizzy from his weight cut. Also, in a factor of what happened there, Mr. Wynn has been released from the UFC.
Does that make you wonder if there was a little more going on there? Because, look, it's a business. Let's not mistake that. And, yes, at times it can be a cold, hard business. I have a hard time imagining UFC just releasing Wynn because he fainted because of a weight cut issue or something like that. I and look, maybe they did, and if they did, that's their prerogative. But it does make you wonder, what were the circumstances? Was there some horseplay involved? Was he doing something maybe he shouldn't have been doing? And that, they believe, resulted in the issue and caused him to be pulled from the fight. You do have to wonder a little bit.
Well, if there was no good reason, when you think it'd be suable, the UFC is very diligent at making sure they themselves are not suable. So if there was any kind of wrongful termination involved with this or any kind of fault of property or facility, I think they've already found that they are not at fault. And yeah, I think you're on a pretty good hunch there.
Yeah, probably so. I think for the most part, that's going to take care of our news and stuff for this week. There are some things that will work into the year-end stuff, and we'll touch on it there. And I guess a good place to start would be the In Memoriam, because that would lead us to the unfortunate and untimely passing late last week of Stephen Bonner.
We had Stephen Bonner out of nowhere, complications from what seems to be like a heart attack or some sort of heart issue, it would seem. And unfortunately, 45 years old, someone that we got to both meet, I interviewed, gone way too soon, a legend of the sport who we can all say without him, we're not where we are today with the sport.
In a way, it's unfortunate because as much credit as he does get with he and the Forrest Griffin fight at the first tough finale, I don't think Stephen Bonner will ever completely get his just due. And maybe that's partially because in this sport, it's all about titles. You win titles, that puts you in a little bit different category. And Bonner never won a UFC title. But without Stephen Bonner and Forrest Griffin in Tough Enough 1, UFC is not what it is today. That's not to say that it couldn't have still found a way to be successful, but the ramifications of that night on Spike TV and what that immediately led to, like throwing a match on a gasoline-soaked fire. It's just UFC took off immediately from that, and yeah, it takes two to tango, but Stephen Bonner more than held up his end of the deal. You could make just as good of an argument that he won that fight as you could Griffin. I mean, that's how close it was. But as much of the accolades as Stephen Bonner does get and rightly deserved, I don't think he will ever get what is really due to him. And again, maybe that's because never won a title, wasn't more successful following Tough Enough than, or excuse me, the Ultimate Fighter Tough Enough. I just went into pro wrestling. Jesus Christ. Following the Ultimate Fighter. And look, a heck of a nice guy. Did he have some demons? Yeah, we all do to a certain degree, but a heck of a guy. And we're probably not doing a UFC and MMA podcast today were it not for Stephen Bonner.
All those words are incredibly correct. That's the guy that beat Keith Jardine, fought Rashad Evans, had the epic back-to-back fights with Forrest Griffin, was in there with Tito, with Jones, pair of great fights that I love with Krzysztof Soszynski. You knew when you saw it was going to be Stephen Bonner that he was going to come out to brawl and give as much effort as he possibly could.
Yeah, look, think about this. So it's the Ultimate Fighter finale. Spike TV executives are in the building. They haven't signed on for a season two. The show gets going gradually. The viewership increases throughout the show. You get to that fight, and it's just a knockdown drag out. And the only I've seen this explained this way: the only way to explain the increase in the ratings throughout that night is people were literally watching, picking up their phones, calling their buddies. You've got to turn this shit on. You have got to turn this on now. You will not believe what you are seeing. Before the TV numbers came in, before the Spike executives left the building that night, they signed on not only for a second season of The Ultimate Fighter, but got the ball rolling in terms of a long-term deal with UFC to broadcast non-Ultimate Fighter shows as well. Also, 1 week later, largely off the buzz of that Stephen Bonner Forrest Griffin fight, UFC 52 set a new company Livegate record and shattered their buy rate records for pay-per-view. They had over 280,000 buys a week later. And yeah, Bonner wasn't on that, neither was Griffin, but a large chunk of that was based off the success and all the hoopla surrounding the Ultimate Fighter finale.
we wouldn't be where we are without that cast of characters, without that fight, without Stephen Bonner and Forrest Griffin.
For sure.
And just overall, unfortunately, it's been a rough year of loss for the MMA community. We've had illness tragically taking both Anthony Rumble Johnson and Elias Theodoro, not to mention the unfortunate murdering of Michael Falcao being stabbed in Brazil. An RIP to those four warriors who gave all of us fans so many memories, and a lot of us paved the way for why we're doing what we're doing.
For sure. And look, not give all those former fighters, they're just due. Absolutely. And you know, Stephen Bonner was obviously the most recent, but all of those terrible, tragic losses, the, you know, Rumble Johnson, Elias, all those guys, and certainly they will be missed, and you know, thoughts out to the family and friends for sure.
Well, now we transition.
Are we ready?
We ready.
We're going to do it. We're going to start handing out some hardware. We don't have a name for our damn awards.
What are these? We're MMA After Hours. Is this the After Hoursies?
That sounds like something at a porn award show, though.
But I mean, doesn't our name kind of sound like something you would,
maybe
you would also did you see? I heard there's what is he? He's a mathematician who you can find his teachings free on Pornhub. This I actually saw from Vice News.
Yeah, that's where you saw it. You didn't accidentally stumble across it on Pornhub. You saw it on Vice News. Okay, I'll buy that.
I'll show it to you later. I swear there was a Facebook post, and I was like, hey, honey, haven't stumbled across this category before. Mathematics. Ooh.
You think there are people that get off on that? Well, you know, there's the MILF stuff, the stepmom, whatever. Ooh, math. Yeah, probably not.
You probably stumble across that somewhere on what... on the teacher student section.
I don't know, maybe. I know.
Okay, so we're totally off track. What do we call the awards?
They're just the damn awards, because look,
the damn awards doesn't matter.
The damn awards.
The damn awards. All right. So the damn awards this year, we're gonna start off with story of the year. Let's get the ball rolling.
The damn story of the year.
The damn story of the year.
All right, what you got?
All right, so number one, we're going to start off with PFL debuting on pay-per-view. We had a whole host of fights. What was that, 8 fights on the card? 6 world title fights. PFL debuted on pay-per-view.
I got a feeling we're not going to bring up PFL many more times on this show today. So... And look, this was a big step for them. Now, did it work? Were fans disappointed? I mean, yeah, maybe. Probably. But it was a big step forward for the company. It definitely deserves to be in the conversation, be one of the nominees, I suppose. I can't help but feel like they're probably going to be, if we released all the tabulations, they're probably going to be at the bottom, though. But no, I think it certainly deserves to be there, for sure.
All right, the second one hasn't even happened yet, but the story is well documented, and we're going to see it here soon. Bellator versus Ryzen officially happening in Japan, head-to-head. We've seen one guy from the promotion head there, but we are going head-to-head here to close out the year.
Can't help but feel like we might not mention Ryzen again on this award show. So, yeah, why not?
Okay, all right. I don't know how many more times we're going to mention this guy.
Uh-oh.
But he makes the wire buzz. He gets that news wire going.
Uh-oh.
Nate Diaz, free agency.
I think that's it. I think that is big news. Because regardless of one loss record, regardless of titles won or not won, Nate Diaz is still one of the biggest draws in MMA. And whether it's PFL, whether it's Bellator, whether it's back to UFC, whether it's fighting a Paul brother, whatever Nate does next will be a spectacle.
This next one, the day I get to erase it from this nominee list, from this category, because it's never going to go away.
Uh-oh.
We're throwing a freaking party if it ever does. Scoring and judging in MMA.
This could be on the list every year, I think. Look, and it certainly seems to come up a lot more these days. My guess is, though, if we really look back, and look, social media is more prevalent than ever, and that might be part of the reason we hear about it more. But my guess is, for the most part, it hasn't gotten any worse. It just hasn't gotten any better. But we have so many more avenues to talk about it and point it out that it makes it almost seem worse than it is. And that's not to say that I don't think it's bad, because I think at times it's absolutely atrocious. But I think it's probably always been as well. But yeah, this could probably be on the top stories list most every year.
Well, I'm going to expand this conversation real quick on this nominee real quick. And to think about it, I think this year was special. The last 2 years, really, somewhere around 18 months, the last 24 months, we've had abbreviations. We've had different definitions of what a 10-8 round is, of what effective grappling is. We've gotten to the point now where if you are not 3/4 of a way into a submission or thudding a guy into oblivion, then it's considered non-effective grappling. So I think that's what's made this year kind of stand out more than others. The fact that grapplers feel like they have to do so much more to be effective this year, because damage has been such a prevalent word.
You would think the solution here would be easy, but obviously it's not, because again, this is something we talk about every single year. But, and I know Anthony Smith pointed this out earlier this week as well, is it really that damn hard to get everybody on the same page? You get the judges together. Here's what you're looking for. Here's what you're doing here. This is right. And look, that's still going to be a bit subjective, but you get everybody on the same page. And then you explain to the fighters, all right, here's what the judges are looking for. This, this, and that. Holding somebody against the cage doesn't count as much as it's not as the same type of control time as if you have somebody down on the mat or whatever. Or it is. It, quite honestly, doesn't matter. Let's just have it be the same in every fight so we're not left wondering what they're looking for and what they're giving more value to.
All great points. Let's cross our fingers that this nominee is out of the category in 2023. All prayers, all prayers.
There you
and
go.
And fifth and last, our final nominee, James Krause betting scandal.
Shnikey. As much as I'd like to say, for me anyway, it's the judging that's the big story. It's the James Krause story because, and I hope I'm wrong on this, I think this is going to have far-reaching implications on the sport. I think it's going to change, maybe not change the way things are done, but it's going to not only put rules in place, which I know UFC has already started doing, but those rules are going to have to be enforced. It's going to change the way, I say UFC and MMA, but not just the way they operate, but the way fight camps and fighters do things as well. And I don't mean inside the octagon, but I mean outside of it. And it's, quite honestly, it wouldn't be different from any other sport. You saw the story last week, Micah, about the Jets assistant coach just being suspended for betting on sports. Not necessarily betting on the Jets, but suspended. So, I mean,
I did not see. I think I saw, are we talking about Austin is his name?
Yes, Miles Austin, yes.
Okay, I saw Miles Austin, Jets coach, suspended. I did not see what for, though. Can you dive in a little bit deeper for us?
Just a little bit, because not a lot's out there. He is appealing the suspension, so the NFL doesn't comment. But, I mean, his attorneys have already put out statements. It's obvious what the suspension is for, but was betting on his team, and I'd have to go back. I'm not sure if he was betting on NFL at all, but it's college football, other sports. I guess he would have had to have been betting on NFL somehow. But
I guess you would have to be betting on the NFL because why would they have grounds for other sports now? Does that seem like it would be overreaching? Why? Like now we're saying athletes can't bet on any sports?
No, and here's and look, I'm not trying to be the fun police. Here's why I would say it's not overreaching. If you're an assistant coach in the NFL and you love to bet on the college football or college basketball, not even involved in your sport, amateur or professional level, college basketball.
Yeah, now you're getting further away from division of connection, and you're getting further away from me understanding because I can understand college football real quick. You know, you'd say, oh, you have alliances, you have connections, you have a telephone tree down there because of it's your farm system. I could understand football, the college football. Football, the college basketball, though, there's less of a connection.
True. But let's say your love of college basketball and betting – as an NFL assistant coach, you start throwing a lot of money on these early season college basketball tournaments, you know, like the Maui Invitational, things like that. The things that are still going on during football season. And you find out you don't know as much as you think you do. And you find yourself in a hole. And a buddy, an acquaintance hears about it, a friend of a friend of a friend, and says, hey, I understand you're kind of in a hole here. I could probably help you out with that, but... See, you guys are playing the Texans this Sunday. I'm a Falcons fan, and I'd love it if Atlanta could somehow get the number one pick. Texans probably need to win a game or two between now and the end of the season to give my Falcons a chance. You're the offensive coordinator. What can we do to keep this game closer? And I'm not saying that would happen.
Like in your theory, though, wouldn't the trouble be more the back end? It wouldn't even be the betting end. It's the back end of fixing again. Like what we're speculating.
It opens up the possibilities. In the MMA world. And look, to be fair, before gambling started getting legalized all over the place, this would probably have been more of an issue. Although, again, how big of an issue? I mean, look, a lot of it's speculative, right? But because you're talking about people who would be betting with bookies and things like that, which is not to generalize, sorry, all you bookies and things out there, but theoretically a more, not sinister, but nefarious atmosphere anyway. So you would think that was what one of the issues with back in the 50s, college basketball point shaving scandals. Somebody gets in a hole, bookie offers you a way out. Not going to affect my stat line if, you know, the guy I'm defending gets by me or I do make one errant pass at a crucial time, you know, something like that. So it opens up the possibilities, point being, and that's why this is going to change MMA. Because, like we've talked about a lot, you've got nothing if you don't have the integrity of your sport, and you never want fans. Look, you might bitch about scoring. You might bitch about a ref missing a call or stopping a fight too soon, and all that's fair. You never want somebody wondering, did that fighter take a dive? Did that fighter, you know, were they working in cahoots? So regardless of the outcome of the James Krause investigation, this has already had a huge impact. If you look at some of the other news springing off of this and the Jeff Molina suspension, it's not a huge jump to assume that at the very least, investigators are looking into whether or not Molina or other fighters under Krause could have been involved as well. And I don't mean just placing bets. And I'm not accusing anybody of anything, but they are checking to make sure that there wasn't fight fixing or all right, hey, my guy here, his shoulder's all messed up. He's going to take the fight, though. It ain't going to last long. Don't rip his shoulder out of the socket. This won't, something like that. So even if none of that is true, we're already going to see big changes here, but I don't think it's a big leap to assume that something along those lines is what's being investigated right now.
Hey, everybody, I'm in a lot of pain. Excuse me if I missed this part. We're talking about Miles Austin. Did we even announce fully Jeff Molina, or you just threw him into the conversation? I think breaking news for everybody.
I threw it into the conversation.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay, so if guys didn't know, Jeff Molina has been suspended also by the Nevada State Athletic Commission. Yep. All we can assume is it appears he is now part of this investigation.
In some way or another. That's a very safe assumption.
Is uncategorized right now. No one has any word. But it would appear he is now. I just wanted to clear that up for everybody. Sorry, I'm in pain, like I said. So that's where we were at. Jeff Molina is now also suspended, along with Derek Minner and James Krause. The story and the plot, as they say, thickens. It's only going to go bigger. It's going to have widespread implications and changes throughout sports. And if you've ever heard anybody say it's not about the money, it's always about the money. And that is why this is definitely story of the year.
For sure. Yeah, look, everything's always about the money. Yeah, look, Michael, we could do a whole show. We could do a series of shows on this. This is the story of the year, and it has to be.
And it has to be. Now, for this next category, I might be jumping ahead of myself. I'm the one that got to line these up. I want to start off with, or second off with, Breakthrough Fighter of the Year. How's that sound to you?
Okay,
all right. And I got a who's who list of fighters here. Well, I got six fighters here.
Okay.
Going to start off with a man that was 2-0. Both wins were finishes. He is a budding featherweight contender, Ilia Topuria. Second off, going to go with a man that was 3-0. Two of the wins were super spectacular. Both were guillotine chokes, Saeed Nurmagomedov. Keep going. Going to go the flyweight division.
I'm sorry. I forget nodding doesn't always translate to audio-only podcast. My bad. Yes, no, but I'm two excellent choices so far.
He also went 2-0. This was in the flyweight division. They were both finishes.
Uh-huh.
Amir Albazi. Also a man that went 2-0 in the flyweight division. One finish, one decision. Matthews Nicolau. Here's another guy who is a finisher. Both wins came by knockout. 2-0 this past year. He's going to be fighting for a world title next month. Jamal Hill. And then I'm going to finish it off with someone that went 3-0 and busted into the middleweight top 10. Roman Dolidze knocking out Kyle Daukaus, Phil Haas, and absolutely smashing up Jack Hermanson. Those are your six nominees.
Those are strong. I would throw another contender out there, but maybe it's too soon. Especially with his fight that was supposed to be in December on the pay-per-view getting bumped. But would you add a Bo Nichols to that category? Who hasn't, I guess, officially had a UFC fight yet, but the way he bursts on the scene and through the Contender Series and all? Or is it still a little too early for that?
I got to say too early because his feet aren't even wet in true. UFC waters.
Yeah, no, and I don't have a problem with that. I agree. But I know there's been a lot of hoopla around him for a guy who, is still very green in this business. I think I like Jamal Hill here.
It's hard for me not to go, like we said right there, with Jamal Hill. He's fighting for a world title. Just looking at the caliber of competition, the wins, it's Johnny Walker and Thiago Santos. The only one I thought we might be able to counter with was Roman Dolidze going 3-0. But really, it's the Hermanson win is only tying kind of one of Hill's wins. So on quality, really going here on quality of win, I think that we're going with Jamal Hill.
Wow, so we've been in agreement on everything so far.
Yeah, I didn't know if there was going to be that much controversy. If you want me to just flat out go on the Roman Dolidze bandwagon because he came out of nowhere and really broke through. I mean, talking about somebody that we didn't even know heading into this year had that kind of potential. I mean, actually, I'm going Roman Dolidze if you want to argue about it.
See, you're just doing that to be combative. I'm fine with that if that's who you want to go with, because that would be my second pick. So I don't have a huge problem with that either.
All right. Okay.
So is it a tie for that damn award?
Well, that damn award, at least everyone else, the other nominees can at least be erased from the category, whereas judging's never going away from the other category.
All right, Micah, what's our next category?
Well, here we're going to go to submission of the year. And I got to start off with Zhang Wei Li's Crucifix RNC championship winning submission against Carla Esparza is our first nominee.
That's pretty strong.
Is it as strong as Islam Mahashev's head and arm choke of Charles Oliveira? Considering competition,
yeah,
dominance. Also, yeah, another strong one is seizing the moment when you're about to be defeated. Jiří Procházka with the rear naked choke of the Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt, Glover Teixeira. I don't know about how you feel about awkward submissions, but Jessica Andrade submitted Amanda Lemos by standing head and arm choke. Standing. You don't see that every day.
I have a feeling we're going to differ in this category as
well. I'm still going. I know. Hold on.
But I'm just saying, I mean, already, just between those four, that's hard to pick one. And you're going to add a couple more.
Liz Carmouche was dominant in defending the Bellator women's flyweight title and a sitting mount straight armbar on Juliana Velasquez. That was super tight, super nasty. It's also, it matters what kind of grappler you submit in this category, because Claudio Polize got a knee bar on Clay Guida. Saeed Nurmagomedov announced his way into the top 15 by submitting Cody Stammen with a guillotine choke that was so tight it looked like his head was about to pop off. The extremely rare buggy choke, Oliver Enningkamp submitting Mark Leminger. That's where your opponent is on top of you in the side control, and you're able to lock up the triangle, cinching in their arms, using your arms also in there, all kinds of pretzel-like. And those are your eight nominees.
That's tough. That's really, really tough. I think I'm going to go with Jiří and Glover.
You're going to go with Jiří and Glover?
I think so.
That one is really good with the exhaustion. I honestly, I got to go with Zhang Wei Li. It wasn't just that she got the crucifix, but I haven't seen a crucifix rear naked choke. And to think that Carla's the wrestler, Carla's the grappler, and it was early in the fight. Like, Glover was gassed and exhausted and near needing a nap at that point. And to me, it was so special seeing what Zhang did. So, again, we're going to be at odds here in this category, and I'm just going to have to live with that one, because I was so close to that buggy choke just because the rarity of it, because you don't see it every day. I'm like, how could I not go here?
Yeah, look, some of these, it's hard to find a wrong answer. And, yeah, you probably could have gone two or three different ones and made a really strong argument in this one. What's our next category, Micah?
Well, we went from the submissions, so I feel it's only fair to go to the knockouts.
All right.
So first off, kick knockout of the year. Because you know we got to break it down by body part.
There's only one right answer here, but go ahead.
We're going to start off with, and we know we're big pro wrestling fans. Check us out over at Pro Wrestling After Hours. And this year we saw Natalie Silva hit Teresa Bledsoe with a sweet spinning back kick. That was some sweet chin music.
Very true. Very true.
Not to mention, it was just last week, but to me it had to be on the list. The left hand, the left foot, Alex Caceres putting down Julian Arosa. Can you top it? Well, maybe we can. Chito Vera, Dominic Cruz. You remember it. It was disgusting. This one we're going to talk about quite a few times today. Leon Edwards, the left high kick, the kick Mary, I guess, putting down Kamaru Usman to win the welterweight title. And one last little nominee that we were live for in Phoenix, Arizona. Michael Chandler's front kick out of nowhere that murdered Tony Ferguson.
And that's my pick. Now, having said that, it's really hard not to pick Leon Edwards. I mean, hell, that resulted in a title win, right? In a fight he was losing, let's be honest. But that kick that Chandler had on Ferguson, and we've all seen the still photos of Ferguson's face flopping in about 8 different directions, that was brutal.
We were live for both of them. I still can't get over the Chandler Ferguson. It was so dramatic, so out of nowhere. The fact that Ferguson was moving forward, he was being effective. He was wearing on Chandler the round before, where there was this weird lull and it was out of nowhere, but that was on Michael Chandler. Like, I'm going Michael Chandler right with you. We got to give the love to Michael Chandler for that one. All right, now after we put some feet on you, we're going to do it with the hands. Knockout Punch of the Year nominees. Going to start off with Jamahal Hill and the left hand that sent Johnny Walker plummeting towards the octagon fence.
Yep.
Sent him flying back. We also got to add in some flavor from UFC London. Molly McCann sent the crowd into a frenzy with a spinning back fist of Luana Carolina. This man on the same card, he jumped up a weight class. He proved he had the power to do it. A big right overhand, Ilya Topuria absolutely hammering Jai Herbert in his lightweight debut. And last but certainly not least, only given 4 for this one, the left hook of destruction. Alex Pajeda annihilating Sean Strickland's title hopes.
I think it's Pajeda.
I'm going Pajeda.
Yeah, Jamahal Hill. How can you say no to the Molly McCann spinning back fist? I think it's Pajeda.
I'm going Pajeda because I can't stop smiling. If I had to go with a second one for me, it would be Jamahal Hill because it wasn't even like he hit him flush. I think he hit him in the forehead on that one, and I've only seen 2 knockouts ever like that. But there's something about the way that Strickland was talking that week, the era of invincibility, because Hill versus Walker, it was a coming out party, but I think we all kind of felt like Hill was primed and ready for that coming out party.
Very true.
Where Strickland was talking so much mess, we thought this crazy fool might have a round and win it.
Yeah. We are in agreement.
Now, this other one, you can add in your 2 cents to me. We're going to move down the hands to the elbows. And I was looking through my records. There were 2. There were only 2 that I could throw into this category, so we're going to be really quick with this one. Is it Jared Cannonier against Derek Brunson? Because he knocks him down with the left and elbowed him into another plane of existence.
Right.
Or was it a fight later where Ty Tuivasa crumbles Derek Lewis, which was the elbow of the year?
Ty Tuivasa.
Gotta go with Ty Tuivasa. Yeah. Crumple Derek Lewis and absolutely obliterate. When do you see a Superman elbow? It's basically what it was off the cage.
Yeah, pretty much.
Now, we went to the legs, to the feet. I forgot to move up those, but we're going to end it with the knee. The knee knockout of the year. And for these, I have 3.
All right.
We're going to start off, and we don't bring them up much on this award show, but 1 championship. It's Demetrius Johnson regaining the 1 flyweight world title in his rematch over Adriano Moraes. Absolutely annihilated him with a jump knee.
Okay.
We have Merkanatazov, if you remember that one, annihilating Tough One and Chukwe. Hit him with the combination, backed him up to the fence. The Russian fighter exploded in, dropping him down. And last but not least, the unceremonious retirement of Frankie Edgar, taking his face and level changing right into Chris Gutierrez's holy cannoli in MSG.
That was brutal.
That was brutal.
That was brutal. Yeah. For me, I think it's that one.
It's going to be that one, and I am perverse because putting out Frankie Edgar and putting out Tony Ferguson, destroying the legends that are so fond of my heart, that's a way to get an end-of-the-year award, apparently, from me.
Yeah, me as well.
Well, now that we've addressed the moves that have highlighted 2022, let's get back into the cage for some of the fights and maybe more of the surprising factor, upset of the year. Now, I have five nominees for this category here inside the UFC. Start off with Sugar Sean O'Malley over Peter Yan.
Okay.
I'll continue you with the UFC debut of Victor Henry off of the regional scene,
right,
defeating Hayani Barcelos. We were there live for it, and we've already talked about it once. I said we're going to bring it up more and more times. Leon Edwards versus Kamaru Usman. Gotta also throw in one that we've mentioned a few times here. Roman Dolidze versus Jack Hermanson. Short notice, jumping in there now. He's in the top 10. And how could we end it any other way, this category, than saying Alex Fajeda versus Israel Adesanya?
The correct answer probably should be Leon Edwards. I'm going Fajeda here because I didn't think he had a shot of winning. I'll be and maybe part of that shame on me, but I didn't think he had a shot of winning. So to me, that's the bigger upset.
We thought Leon had a chance at winning.
I thought he kind of sort of had a shot. Yeah, did I feel good about it? No.
I'm going against you here. I'm going with Leon Edwards.
No, I get it.
Bigger upset because we thought Fajeda could knock out Adesanya after being grounded up. And honestly, after the first takedown in Salt Lake City, I thought maybe this can be different than what we expected.
Yeah.
But heading into that week, none of us were really batting that much of an eye as Usman's talking about movie roles and not really giving the respect that was deserved to Edwards. That's what I almost feel like to the media, to the pundits, to all of us that should have known better. We overlooked Leon Edwards in a way we did not Alex Fajeda, making it a grander upset to me.
See, I think everything you just said about Leon Edwards, I think that's what I did with Fajeda.
Oh, and as adamant as I was, as you said, because, I was going to make that
right,
argument.
Right. Look, I didn't give a shit about the two kickboxing wins. That meant nothing to me. Maybe it should have. Perhaps, look at this, judging controversy. Two very capable judges trying to hand out an award and both looking at vastly different things that are more important to us. Maybe we should have had a sit down and got on the same page with the criteria here. Look, again, with a lot of these, Micah, in all seriousness, I don't think there's a wrong answer. And I can't argue with you on that at all. I just see it a little bit. And look, I prefaced all this by saying the right answer probably should be Leon Edwards. But I've got to go Fajeda here.
Okay, we're going to continue this argument because that's upset of the year. All right, so
did you put money on these awards, Micah?
So here is my four nominees for comeback of the year. And how can we not do this besides Surreal Gone over Tai Tuivasa, Yuri over Glover, Leon over Kamaru, and Alex over Izzy?
Okay.
The shit. Which one was a better comeback?
Damn. All right, the correct answer here probably is Yuri. Maybe this is a bit of a makeup. I'm going to go Leon Edwards.
It's Yuri. I feel like it's Yuri or it's Gone because Gone was knocked silly by Tai before he came back. And Yuri was beaten down on a way to losing where Alex was mounting a comeback. And I guess you could go with Leon here if you want to. I can see that because we thought
same
he was
going
to rise in that last 90 seconds. You were like, oh, this is just going to end. This is so boring. And we're, oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah, same situation. He was losing that fight. That fight was over. It was done until it wasn't. Again, can you argue with me if I say Leon? Can I really argue with you if you say Yuri? I mean, we could, but Yeah, I mean, whatever. I'm right, but whatever. I think both solid choices, and I'm kidding. Yeah.
As we turn back to reality now, we're going to start to focus again on the individual fighter as we move past. And if everybody wants to know, yes, we were literally going to saw these imaginary awards in half, and we will send each one their half view at Instagram. Don't worry. Each nominee, as we are arguing here, will still get their rightful gratification, even though Carlisle believes he gets to send the full award off. I'll cut him in half. Don't worry, guys. All right. So there's a couple different promotions that we do talk about on our cast quite often. We're going to start off with Fighter of the Year for each one. LFA Fighter of the Year nominees. We are going to start off with the LFA Bantamweight Champion, 2-0 in the promotion this year, a tenacious grappler, Muin Gafarov. Another tenacious grappler on the rise coming out of Southern California, Richie Miranda, 3-0, coming out of CSW, trained by Josh Barnett. 3-0 this year, he is a featherweight tournament finalist and acclaimed striker, Jose Delano. And last but not least, 3-0 this year in the LFA, capped off their year by winning the LFA welterweight title, Chris Brown.
Delano.
Going with Jose Delano?
I am.
Gonna split you there, and I gotta go with a friend of the show, Chris Brown. If you look
at the caliber, hell kind of judging is this? Favoritism, nepotism, Jesus Christ. No, I'm kidding. I knew you were gonna go Chris Brown, though.
I know, and I knew when you winked at me that you were lucky we don't have this on video. LFA Fighter of the Year is Chris Brown. I'm overruling you. In this category.
Oh, you're overruling me. Holy crap. Okay.
See, dirty judging all the way around.
Well, that's
overruling.
Fine. I have an overrule in my back pocket now. So, all right.
All right. Bellator Fighter of the Year. Got five nominees here.
All right.
Start off with the Bellator middleweight champion of the world, Johnny Eblen this year. Decision wins over both John Salter and Gegard Mousasi. Going to follow it up with Bellator Bantamweight Grand Prix finalist Patchy Mix. The decision win over Koji Hataguchi and the submission of Magomed Magomedov. His opponent, Rufian Stotts, the Bellator interim Bantamweight champion. A third round TKO of Juan Archuleta and the decision win over Danny Sabatella. The category would not be complete without Bellator heavyweight champion Ryan Bader, unified the titles of Valentin Moldavsky, defended both decision wins, defended over Chet Congo. And our final nominee, he's the new Bellator lightweight champion of the world, Usman Nurmagomedov, 2-0 this year, sub Chris Gonzalez in a round, and then made it look easy beating Patricky Pitbull Freire to win the title.
I'm going to go Johnny Eblen.
Johnny Eblen, quality of wins, Mousasi, Salter. I really got to flip a coin. This is a tough group. When you look at the quality of wins, like Magomedov, what he came in with, Hoyer Gucci dominating in Japan, and Nick's made it look easy. Stotts finished Juan Archuleta. Who's done that? Bader proved to be the best heavyweight in the mix. I got to go Usman Nurmagomedov because he made it look easy both times. He made it look easy against Gonzalez. He made it look easy against Patricky. And for all of his faults, even those fights against Peter Quilly, they were messy. He put Quilly through a war to get that belt. And to see that Usman handled him like it was nothing impressed me in a stupid way. But you can almost say the same for what Eblen did against Mousasi.
I think you swayed me. I think in an unprecedented move on these damn awards, I'm going to change my vote.
Go with Usman.
I'm sorry, Johnny Eblen, but yeah, I'm going Usman Nurmagomedov.
Usman.
Yep, you did it. Congratulations.
All right. Wow. Now that leaves us with one promotion to talk about this male fighter of the year category, the UFC. Oh, okay. I got five nominees for you, okay. And I tried to make it hard on you. Gonna start out with Chito Vera. He beat Rob Font, Dominic Cruz in 1 year.
Yeah.
Next up, he's the bantamweight champion of the world, Aljamain Sterling. He beat Peter Yan, and it's not his fault that TJ Dillashaw was injured, and he finished him like he should. He fulfilled a promise, a destiny, and surpassed his mentor. Islam Makhachev is the lightweight champion of the world. How could he not be on here? Alexander Volkanovski beating TKZ and absolutely destroying Max Holloway. When I say destroy, there was no bigger destruction, in my opinion, than Alex Pajeda destroying Sean Strickland. And then he beat Israel Adesanya. So again, Chito Vera, Aljamain Sterling, Islam Makhachev, Alexander Volkanovski, Alex Pajeda, UFC Male Fighter of the Year, five nominees.
It's Volkanovski.
Is it Volkan?
It has to be Volkanovski.
Pound for pound, yeah. Top fighter in the world.
Now,
about to go for a second belt.
I'm curious who you pick, because you could make a really strong argument for Chito Vera if you really wanted to.
I was thinking Pajeda.
Were you? Okay.
It's hard for me to say who had a higher caliber of win, because TKZ, Volkanovski made TKZ look so bad. He was so far ahead of him that it almost doesn't hold the same weight that win does compared to the streak that Strickland was on. That Strickland win, though, if you really want me to analyze it, almost doesn't hold as much weight because he did lose to Cannonier and he has looked hard-headed in his style. But Israel Adesanya looked to be so far ahead of the game. To catch him, to have that recipe, to do it just seven fights into your MMA career. I can flip a coin between Volkanovski and Pajeda, but it's that close for me. Do you see where I'm at?
Oh, no. Even for Pajeda? Sure. No, absolutely. No doubt about it. Yeah, and I can't really argue with you on it, but for me, it's Volkanovski. Not just the two wins, the dominating fashion in which he won, that string of Dominic victories from previous years that I know don't factor into this year's awards, but the role he's on right now, for me, it's Volkanovski.
He's the best fighter on the planet. He can do it all. You swayed me. I'm going with you.
Oh, Alexander, look at that.
Volkanovski gets the award. We're official right there. It's Volkanovski. Now, you've heard me spout off all the men's names, and you're like, all right, Micah, you're just being chauvinistic here. All right, here we go. Women's MMA Fighter of the Year. Going to start off with a non-champion in the mix. Erin Blanchfield, 2-0 in 2022, tempted to put her in Breakthrough Fighter of the Year. She's going to be fighting Talia Santos. That puts her a win away from a world title shot. She submitted J.J. Aldrich and Molly McCann and made it look easy in 2022. I already gave this woman submission of the year. Zhongwei Li, 2-0 in 2022. Two finishes, spinning back fist knocked out Joanna, sent her all the way into retirement, and then she put Carla Esparza, an accredited wrestler and grappler, into a pretzel to win the title. Liz Carmouche is the Bellator Women's Flyweight Champion. She fourth round TKO Juliana Velasquez to take the belt and made it look even easier in the rematch with that straight armbar that was on the Submission of the Year nominees list. And I topped this all out with the winningest member of this category, who might have actually probably been an Upset of the Year nominee too. I probably should have thrown it in there. Larissa Pacheco, 4-0, three first round knockouts, and the unanimous decision win to defeat and the first loss ever to Kayla Harrison, who say you is the MMA Women's Fighter of the Year.
All good choices. Zhongwei Li. Beating Joanna, sending her into retirement, beating Esparza for the title, and looking so dominant in both of those. A KO of Joanna, submission of Esparza. For me, it's Whaley.
See, if I really want to discredit that Joanna win, I can. She was done. It was her time. She was on the way out. This was a last gasp effort. It's all the roundabout way for me to sing, I wish I could give it to Erin Blanchfield, but it has to be Larissa Pacheco because she beat Kayla Harrison, and that was like the boogie woman in MMA. This was the abdominal goat staring out there, calling out all of these titans. I'm better than you. I'm better than you. And she overlooked David, and Goliath was crumbled. Larissa Pacheco deserves acknowledgement this year.
No, not really.
I'm cutting that award in half. Or are you vetoing me? You have a veto here.
I really wanted to hold on to that. Let me try to sway you. All right, we can all agree. Slasher film bad guys. The greatest of all time, Jason Voorhees, right? We can agree with that.
Yes.
Okay, for the sake of my argument, yes. We can agree on that.
I'm really not. Yeah, all I'm probably actually going with Voorhees.
Going around the summer camp, slicing up all the teens while they're trying to have sex and all that, right? But if Jason Voorhees, instead of going to that camp, went on the other side of the river to the Little Tykes summer camp, and instead of killing 16, 17, 18-year-old kids, he's killing 4- and 5-year-olds. He's really not as tough, right?
Oh, God.
So,
but when he ends the movie killing Superman.
No, he ends the movie getting killed after killing a bunch of little 5-year-olds instead of being tired from killing peak performance 17, 18-year-olds. See where I'm going here?
I get what you say about
Kayla Harrison, as wins. Dominant as she was, the competition. Okay. So when you take down Jason Voorhees, but it's the Jason Voorhees from the kiddie camp rather than Camp Crystal Lake, it really is impressive. Instead of killing Jason, it's like killing the cheap knockoff, whatever. John Voorhees, who instead of wearing a hockey mask, wears like a lacrosse helmet or something with a little face guard or something.
On quality of competition, Zhang Guili is our female fighter of the year.
I did it.
All right.
I kind of lost myself about halfway through it, so I was afraid I had lost you too.
No, you totally lost me. But I was just like, well, Kayla hasn't really beat anybody, so how strong is the win over Kayla?
It would have been easier if I just said that, I guess, right?
I guess so, but you had a lot of fun.
I did.
All right, as much as I'm going to have fun with this next category, we have 11 nominees.
Holy crap.
Fight of the year.
Okay.
All right, you ready for the long haul?
I am.
Almost got one a month here. So we're going to start out early in the year, January. And I couldn't put this one not on the list because I loved it as soon as it happened. Gia Chikadze versus Calvin Kattar.
Okay.
Earlier that month, my bad. I should have put this better chronological order. You were there live for it. Moreno Figueiredo 3.
Yes.
Okay, this one was in February. Shit, I don't know if you were at this one. Arosa versus Peterson. It was on the UFC Fight Night, Hermanson versus Strickland.
No. I wasn't there.
But that was a sobber knocker.
Yeah.
This one was, maybe it only lasted one round, but might have been the best round of the year. Drew Dober versus Terrence McKinney. You know I love me that fight.
Yeah.
April, everybody loved this fight in April. Gilbert Burns versus Khamzat Chimaev. Absolute war.
Yeah, it was.
All right, front runner in the category because I'm going month by month order. We already know this one is front runner. In June, UFC 275, Jiří Prochazka, Glover Teixeira. Need I say more?
Probably not, but go ahead.
July, Matt Snell, Sumo Sundarji. Both knocked each other down. Ended in a crazy submission. Oh, that was a good one. August, David Onama and Nate Landwehr. Nate Landwehr was dead to rights two times and somehow just out-toughed, kept coming back and grinding upon David Onama. We were there for this one live in August. There was blood exchanged. And we'll maybe never see Luke Rockhold in the octagon again. Costa versus Rockhold makes the list.
Better get my veto ready.
September to remember. Gone versus Tuivasa.
Yeah.
And last but not least, we needed it. We had to have it. It was everything it was built up to be. Poirier versus Chandler. Michael Carlisle, who is fight of the year?
Did you not have Oliveira Gaethje on there?
Oh, shit. Okay.
Oh, no, it's fine. I was just saying that was already.
No,
that was just a fight that stood out in my mind that I didn't hear you mention. But no, believe me, it would not have been my pick. See, now I really want to say the Paulo Costa Luke Rockhold fight, but I know. I think it's Jiří and Teixeira.
Because it was literally every ounce of effort
and
energy that either man had in their body to the last second finish that no one saw coming. One of the few pay-per-views we've bought throughout the year because of the early morningness. It was special. Yeah. It was special. And again, the only other one that I feel like could stand up to it was Costa versus Rockhold. And maybe I felt like that because we were live to be there. And that was the craziest one of this list that we saw. But then again, Poirier versus Chandler, we were also there nuts. For it. And that was nuts.
That was Moreno Figueiredo was great. Burn Shemaev. I mean, geez.
You know what this list proves? We had some great fights in 2022.
We did. Yeah. 100%. Oh. Yeah.
But yeah, I got to go with you. Teixeira, Prochazka. That is our fight of the year.
Boom.
Boom. Fight of the year. So we are down to our last category. I don't know if you need to use your veto power or not.
I'm going to now because I've got it.
And you have to. What are you saving it for? Or you could even come up with a category that I'm missing if you think I wasn't thorough enough this year.
Okay.
Event of the year is where I'm going for the last award. Okay. And I had a couple in mind here. I only got four, so maybe even come up with one that I didn't have. You were there for this first one. UFC 270. We had gone in Ngannou.
I was not there for that.
Oh, you were not there?
Nope.
I thought you were there.
Nope.
Oh, we had gone in Ngannou, we had Figueiredo Moreno 3, we had Saeed Nurmagomedov's submission of Cody Stammen, and we had the Victor Henry win over Hayani Barcelos. So flat across two title fights, other categories with nominees of the year, I felt like this one deserved to be in it. It kicked off the year. It set the tone for 2022. I continue on. We've talked about this one a couple times. UFC Fight Night, Aspinall versus Volkov.
Yeah.
9 finishes on that card, including Aspinall, Arnold Allen, Pimblett, and McCann. All the English stars getting big victories. The atmosphere, the stoppages. It was crazy. UFC Fight Night, Santos versus Hill. 10 for 10. 10 fights, 10 finishes, 7 knockouts, 3 submissions, and 4 of them came in the very first round. My favorite event of all time. All finishes. Oh my gosh. And UFC 275 to close out the category. We had Glover Jiří. We had Valentina getting pushed by Talia Santos. We had Zhang Weili over Joanna as part of 6 finishes on the card. Did I miss an event that you were thinking of?
Yep.
Which one?
274. Oliveira Gaethje.
Because we have Oliveira Gaethje. We have Chandler Ferguson.
You know what?
But
I know
that glaring eyesore.
I know. Yeah, I know. I know.
I'm sorry.
I know. Yeah, you also had Esparza Nama Yunus there. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you had Chandler Ferguson, Oliveira Gaethje. Oliveira looked really good. Of course, yeah, we know.
They miss weight. There is
right. Yeah. That, okay, so maybe that puts a little stain on that. I was a little surprised you didn't give 271 a little love.
271?
Adesanya Whitaker. Because you also had Tuivasa KOing Derek Lewis. You had Cannoneer Brunson.
I've never had a better view for a UFC fight. I've never had a more spectacular experience. So I thought I was being a little bit too personal just going straight for that event. Because if you want me to be honest, it was the greatest. Like that close to Whitaker Adesanya? Oh, my God. Yes, yeah. I will choose that one if you want to throw it on the board.
Yeah. No. It's fine. It's fine. Based on what you threw out there, we've shown him a lot of love. It may as well continue. I think it's Teixeira Yuri, 275 in Singapore.
Well, you get the vetoing power, so UFC 275 is the event of the year.
But if you agree with me, it takes away my ability to veto you.
Well, I already disagreed. I told you that Santos versus Hill was my favorite event of all time, 10 for 10 to have finishes. Yeah. So, yeah, no, my official vote goes there for UFC Fight Night on ESPN Plus that I don't know if more than a handful of us watched.
But you think about the Teixeira Yuri card, 275. Yuri getting the sub late in round five when he's about to lose. Your co-main event, Valentina Shevchenko beat Santos.
Did she?
But did she? Exactly. You had Zhang Wei Li destroy Joanna. That was a hell of a main card.
Okay, here is why I can't go with UFC 271. Do you really remember loving Grisham versus William Knight? I mean, Jacob Malkun, AJ Dobson, Ronnie Lawrence, Mono Martinez.
Nah.
Carlos Olberg versus Fabio Charant. Some of the meat of that card was not that great. Where, to be honest, you look over at UFC 275 that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And in that card, we had Jake Matthews knocking out Andre Fiajo, Jake Della Maddalena, JDM with the body punch, nastiest body punch probably of the year, taking out Ramazan Emiev. You had Machete knocking out, unfortunately, friend of the show, Steve Garcia. Brendan Allen was on that card. I think I'm with you there, actually. UFC 275, when you go back and look at it, you had the Sylvia Gomez-Jarez knockout in the first round. I think overall quantity, knockout by knockout, it's really some great stuff. But if you want me to, again, argue, look back at the fight night that I'm so happy to argue for. Yes, Jamal Hill gets the knockout. Get Jeff Neal over Vicente Luque. You did have the tough winner's crown, Muhammad Usman and Juliana Miller just making statements. Sergey Spivak came out in a big way. Love me some Terrence McKinney. And he got the standing rear naked choke finish in that one. Possibly could have been on the submission of the year nominees. Brian Battles, head kick of Takashi Sato. Left high kick, nearly there, but Leon Edwards did it better. So this event, again, I'm arguing, I'm telling you, finish for finish, Santos versus Hill, UFC 275, probably the two best events we had all year.
Which one are you taking?
Well, I'm going with Hill versus Santos once I look back at it again. Where I'm like, my gosh, these were disgusting. Not to mention Mikey Omyalanchuk finally knocked Sam Alvey out of the octagon. We didn't know that was possible.
All right, so you're taking Hill, Santos. I'm taking 275. As I reach into my back pocket and slap down the veto. You are denied, sir.
UFC
the damn award for fight of the year goes to or for card of the year goes to UFC 275.
Okay, all right. So trying to hammer this out real quickly. Gonna go back. Breakthrough fighter of the year. We had two guys. We had Dalidze. We had Jamal Hill. Pretty sure it's Jamal Hill, right?
Yeah.
Johnny Walker was hot flavor. Thiago Santos, former world title challenger. We have to, I've been told now by management, I can't cut the awards in half. We have to get down to one. Jamal Hill, breakthrough fighter of the year.
You realized you were going to have to cut all the awards in half, didn't you?
Management told me, and that is the official statement
okay.
from the After Hours Podcast Network. Upset of the year. Was it Usman? Was it Edwards or was it Pajada? Which one was a bigger upset?
For me, it was Pajada. For everybody else, it was probably Edwards. And if that's the way you want to go, I will not argue.
Okay. Comeback of the year. We're saying that Shiri, right?
Yeah.
All right. All right. Now that we've confused everybody, I guess we'll go through this.
Yeah, all right. Fine, Yuri. That's fine.
All right.
Whatever.
All right, everybody. Now to give it to you in full. Our MMA After Hours 2022 award winners.
Time out. So what just happened here? Earlier on, you used your veto power to overrule me on something. I held my veto until the end. And after I throw it down, now you go back and change all the ones that we tied on and just turned them into the ones you wanted.
I gave you Jamal Hill right off the bat.
And then you took the next two. You totally screwed me, dude.
No, but didn't you say Jury on the first one? I swear you did. We're going to have to check the tape. We're going to have to go back afterwards and check the tape.
I just know I'm getting screwed somehow.
Story of the year is, of course, James Krause and betting.
Yeah,
has to be. Breakthrough fighter of the year is Jamal Hill, right?
Yep.
You're good.
Yep.
Submission of the year, Zhang Weili.
Yep.
Fight of the year, Teixeira versus Prochaska.
Yep.
Knockout kick of the year, Michael Chandler. Tony Ferguson.
Yeah.
That has to be the kick of the year.
I think so.
Punch of the year, Alex Pajada, Sean Strickland.
Yeah.
Elbow of the year, Tai Tuivasa, Derek Lewis. Knee of the year, Chris Gutierrez defeating Frank Yeager. Upset of the year, Leon Edwards or Alex Pajada? Make the call. Right now, last time, make the call.
In all honesty, I'm finding that for me, it's Pajada. Again, I just gave him no shot at all. Almost defiant because everybody gets there. We beat him twice in kickboxing. So again, that was probably short-sightedness on my part. But I gave him so little of a chance to win. To me, that's got to be the bigger upset. If you want to say it's Edwards, I can't argue with that at all.
Okay, we're sending the unofficial award to Alex Pajada. Not arguing about this, not screwing you. Alex Pajada, knockout punch of the year, upset of the year. I'm fine with it. I don't know if I've screamed that loud from the fifth floor before. Comeback win of the year, Jiří Procházka over Glover Teixeira. Yeah, LFA fighter of the year, Chris Brown.
Sure.
Bellator fighter of the year, Usman Nurmagomedov. UFC male fighter of the year, Alexander Volkanovski. Our MMA women's fighter of the year, Zhang Weili. Our event of the year, UFC 275. This was the year of Weili, Yuri, and Pajada. Not to mention Leon Edwards. Does that feel about right from what we've learned from what our celebration and awards show produced?
Yeah. I'm good with that.
I am good with that, too. And one more time to tell you, Usman Nurmagomedov, Aaron Blanchfield, the two youngest names on this list that you need to be watching out for.
Yeah. I cannot believe, Micah, and I don't know fighter of the year, move of the year, sweet-ass somersault of the year. I got no Chris Barnett on this list anywhere.
Did we need post-fight celebration of the year?
At the very least, best flip by a heavyweight or something. We couldn't have come up with something?
You just gave it to him, best flip by a heavyweight.
Done. Congratulations, Chris Barnett.
Actually, shit, here's a good question for you to end it, and this is going to be a hard one. And this is just the Mike Carlisle special. Better post-fight speech. Chris Barnett, I love y'all. Are Renato Money Moicano.
Oh, it's Chris Barnett. You get up and say anything after doing a flip at that size, after you just beat the shit out of somebody, you're winning. I'm sorry. You are winning.
Well, there you go. Post-fight speech of the year award. The Michael Carlisle special goes to Chris Barnett.
Done. Hope you enjoyed the damn awards. Our year-end show. We will be back next week. We'll get into the latest news and notes. Look ahead to the upcoming year. Probably, I'm sure, look back, Micah, on Ryzen versus Bellator. One must die or something. Two men enter, two organizations enter, one organization leave. No, nothing. No.
Who comes out with supremacy? Yeah. Not to mention our buddy John Dotson's going to be on the card.
That's
so
right.
We'll definitely let you guys know how that one turns out. You can go over to cageminds.com. The YouTube channel is Cage Minds MMA Show. Over on Facebook, it's Cage Minds Combat Sports News. On Instagram, CageMinds_CSN for Combat Sports News. And over on Twitter, it's the original at Cage Minds MMA.
Get the show on Twitter at MMA After Hours. You can find me at Real Mike Carlisle. Email us MMAAfterHours@gmail.com. We will talk to you next week for another episode of MMA After Hours here on the After Hours Podcast Network.
Love combat sports? I have a website for you, cageminds.com. That's CageMinds.com. Fight news from around the world, in-depth interviews, live event coverage. Covering combat sports for over a decade. Established in April 2011. That's cageminds.com.